Chapter 50. Setting sail, coming home. Sholan was marveling at the world. The last time she had been out of the sect, it had been a mad dash after Sun Kan and then a swift march home. After months of training the juniors and dealing with men who were entirely too pushy, she was finally released with a command that she had to be at the Dueling Peaks in time for the tournament as her only restriction. But she had been sneaky. The snows melted in the Verdant Blade sect far faster than they should melt up near Verdant Hill, so she had been released, unknown to her honorable father, early. She never knew how much the world inside the compounds of her sect grated until she had truly seen the world. Now she was taking her time and enjoying herself. The world outside was really quite beautiful, especially as the meadows filled with spring flowers. She took her time to observe everything. The first bees rousing from hibernation, pollinating the flowers, and the fresh shoots of grass bursting from the ground. She tried to see the connections between things. She must have made an odd sight, a lone woman traveling while carrying a large bundle on her back. The plow had been disassembled for transport. She had to stifle a chuckle at the sight of the legendary sword that had been broken and hammered down into this. She hoped that the plow, in addition to her other wedding gifts, would be well received. Now, she just had to find a way to lose her watchers. She could feel them. Elder Yi, in contrast to her father, had been suspicious of her sudden request to leave. It was not something she had ever requested before, and now she endangered her promise to Master Jin to not disturb him with such petty matters. She pondered as she walked, humming to herself. Could she just run immediately from her tail? Would they be able to catch her? And then she hit upon an idea. She smiled to herself and slowly adjusted her course away from Master Jin's house. They expected her to do something strange, or potentially hide or run. She would do nothing of the sort. They would see exactly what she had told the other elders she was doing, leaving the sect for world experience. She would be loud, draw attention to herself, and then, once her watchers got complacent, then she would be able to escape their sight. With her making a name for herself in the south, nobody would be looking for her in the north. In the next town, she heard tales of a marauding four-venom serpent. And so the name Cai Sholan resounded once more across the azure hills. The snow melted away, slowly at first and then with increasing speed as the days got warmer and warmer. The river rose, but like I'd planned, it never rose enough to flood the house, even with the meltwater surging down the hills. In what seemed like no time at all, the ground was revealed, and the hardy spring plants began pushing their way out of the ground. There was one piece of snow left on my property, the general that commands the winter. He had been a worthy sentinel, standing guard over the farm. His nose had long since been eaten, the bundled carrots going into soup stocks or stir fries. His ash-colored buttons had been snowed over or carried off by winter winds. His hat and arms had been casualties of our need for fuel for the syrup fires. Really, all that was left was a formless pillar and his two beady eyes. It was time for spring. I could let him slowly melt, but I needed the spot he was sitting on. I was going to have a lot of guests, and I would be erecting a temporary building. I guess it would be more like a wooden floor to keep everyone off the wet ground. So, with my shovel, I began the process of dispersing the general that commands the winter. He was still goddamn massive, nearly four stories tall, even when he was getting worn away by heat and rain. The snow was easy to get through, coming away in great chunks, with most of it getting tossed into the swollen river. I was just getting into the zone when I hit something that wasn't snow. Huh. He was so big that he had a small core of completely solid ice, which had started to turn blue from the pressure. I carefully excavated out the piece of ice. It was about the size of my palm and almost blue in color. I frowned at it. It had chi in it. My own chi, and it wasn't melting even when it was in the palm of my hand. Had I accidentally made an ice crystal? Just as I thought that, it released a drip of water. Okay, into the ice pit you go, along with Tigger statues. I idly wondered if the next year I should put it into another general winter. Ah, well, a bit more to do until I can go and see the wedding preparations. Then I can put my recording crystal to use. Yunzhen was extremely nervous as he held his precious cargo, Traditionally, the groom wasn't allowed to see the bride for a week before the wedding to avoid bad luck. Jin had been very upset when he was told that, because he'd wanted to record all the preparations. So Yunzhen and his brother had been press-ganged into learning how to use a recording crystal. He had ended up being better than his brother, but Yunzhen had a feeling that Gozhen had flubbed being able to use it on purpose. He probably hadn't wanted the responsibility of taking care of something so valuable. So now Yunzhen was the official wedding recorder, a dubious honor. His palms got all sweaty at holding the ridiculously expensive item. He was afraid he was going to drop it. Would it shatter if he did? Now say, cheese? Why had Jin required people to say cheese, of all things, when they knew they were being recorded? Well, it was a custom he was going to follow. Maybe it made the chi in the recording work better. Cheese? Mei Ling and Xian asked, amused. Xian was standing in his formal clothes, while Mei Ling was seated on a chair in her red wedding dress. Yunzhen's chi pressed into the crystal, and it shuddered. The image had been recorded. How did Jin say to... Okay, there we go. He carefully manipulated the crystal, and it began floating in the air. It was damn exhausting. This thing ate chi worse than boiling water. With a careful prod, the picture projected itself onto the air as an oval disc, hovering and two-dimensional. Yunzhen stared in fascination. This was so amazing. See? Xian told his daughter. You're as beautiful as your mother was. The freckled girl flushed. Yunzhen prodded the crystal. The image changed from Xian and Mei Ling looking formal to her smiling warmly at her father. That was a good image, too. Jin would like it. He prodded the crystal again, and his own face, staring and considering, hovered in the air. Huh. So that's what he looked like. He had seen his reflection a couple of times before, in water or in the burnished bronze disc the Hong family had, but this one, it was so clear. It recorded even the little scar on his cheek that he had, from when a branch had whipped back and cut him. Yunzhen carefully collected the crystal again. He considered putting it away in the box Jin had given him, but he paused. Jin had never told him how many images he wanted preserved, just that he wanted to see the preparations. So he went out into the village. There were carts being prepared. Mei Hua sharpened a knife and spoke fondly with her father, while Ting Feng went through everything that was being brought along for the wedding. He captured everything. His own father cleaning a deer hide, his brother playing absently with his new sickle, a gift for when he went to work, the man going over the flags and banners, the kids running around underfoot. He felt sweat start to bead on his brow. His neighbor grooming the white horse, the sky beautiful and blue, the spot on the shrine roof that let you look over the entire village. His eyes defocused as he felt an odd, almost empty sensation in his chest. He paused for a moment, panting and lightheaded. He panted, then leaned against the wall. So this was what chi exhaustion felt like. It wasn't too bad yet. He straightened up again, then pressed his energy into the crystal. The images he had taken formed before his eyes, and he flipped through them delightedly. He got an idea. Hey! Everyone gather around, he shouted out, drawing the entirety of Hong Yao Wu's attention. Jin wants to see everyone. Gather around. Curious, the village gathered, crowding around the shrine. He could see the image that was going to be captured in his mind's eye. Now, everybody, there's some profound words you have to say for this to work right. The adults were bemused, the children enthusiastic. Cheese! That night, he felt absolutely exhausted, especially because he kept pushing his chi, staring at the recorded images. The oval discs floated in the air. That one, the sun had gone behind a cloud. The image he had tried to capture had been ruined. In this one, if he had told his mother to tilt her head just a little bit more, then it would have definitely looked better. Long into the night, he studied the images he had captured, marveling at some and purging others from the crystal. It was really quite intuitive once you got the hang of it. He kept going until lightheaded turned into a pounding headache. The crystal finally dropped onto his chest as he stared at the ceiling, his brother long since asleep beside him. His last thought before sleep claimed him was, I gotta get me one of these. Tigu sighed as she prowled the area. Conquering new lands was proving frustrating, mostly because there was nothing to conquer. She marched into the new territory and proclaimed her dominance, that all under heaven and upon the earth now belonged to the master, and dared any to test her blades. So far, nothing had taken her up on her offer. She had added many li to the master's land, but it all rang so hollow. She sighed again. At least carving had taken the edge off. Turning base ice and wood into things of beauty was a worthy pursuit for one such as herself. And, of course, her subject matter was beauty and power incarnate. Both she and her master were the only things worthy of being produced by her claws. Bidi was powerful, but he was a rooster, an ugly, vulgar creature. Her original works were even stored in the Gallery of Ice, the master preserving them for her. He had praised her greatly for her skill. He was the only one who had. The others had looked on, but none wanted to talk to her about her art.
They wouldn't know beauty if it bit them.
None of them wanted to train with her either. Like she needed them. She would be powerful and protect this place by her lonesome if she had to. She ambled through the forest, glancing around. Well, if she couldn't find anything to fight and kill, she could find something to carve. She had done wood and ice. Perhaps she could try her hand at stone next. She marched into the next section of forest and declared herself and her intentions. The silence was deafening. She sighed again, then cut a promising-looking branch off a tree. Since she had been foiled today, she would just have to range farther.
Life good. Friends happy. Wife happy. His name Chunky. Wife and friend say Chunky. Ears full of hair and feathers. Big brother's names that he gave them were weird, but that fine. They were friends. Good friends. He lay on porch in sun. Or was Ingawa, or veranda, or Yang Tai. Head hurt to think too long. Something's jumbled. So he stopped. Not important. It was what it was. Sun nice, warm, wife pressed against side. Peppa was good wife. Pretty lady, kind, patient, even when he was slow. Big brother on other side. Big brother was nervous. His leg bounced and his face was pale. He kept twitching. Chunky wondered why. It was supposed to be happy time soon, yes? He oinked, then nuzzled closer into Big Brother's side. The bouncing leg paused. Big Brother started scratching Chunky's scars. Light touch, feels good. Big Brother kind, too. Help Chunky. Take him out of the jumbled nightmare where everything swirled and went on forever. Nasty place, made by nasty Chao Ji. The scratches and wife kept away the shakes. Big D came to sit with them. Strange name, Big D. He's small, but big power, perhaps. Tigger was next, carving a branch. She was supposed to bounce and be cheery, but she only bounced and cut things. Silly little friend. Finally came Washi, flip-flopping to lay beside them and then splashing into his jar. He felt the heartbeat of the land, the comforting fingers of Big Little Sister waking from her long sleep. All friends here but Rizzo. Sad no little Rizzo. But soon they'd be whole again. Pretty healing sage would come, and friends and family would grow. He sighed happily as they sat together.
Mei Ling felt like she was going to throw up as her father helped her onto the horse.
Deep breaths, Mei Mei. Deep breaths,
Mei Hua encouraged. Mei Ling said nothing.
Oh God, it's actually happening,
she thought. The red lanterns were out. The wagons were loaded. Yunzhen was everywhere with the recording crystal. He had fallen in love with the thing. Mei Ling wondered if it had a limit to the number of images it could store, because at the rate he was going, Yunzhen might fill it up before the wedding even happened. She had to admit, though, some of the images he took were very striking. She tried to concentrate on Yunzhen instead of the fact that the Lord Magistrate was here, and with him came an entire feast.
The Lord Magistrate himself attending the wedding.
She chewed her lip and rubbed her hands together, trying to distract herself.
Senior sister,
a voice called happily. Mei Ling turned to the voice.
Good morning, Sholan,
she said, her voice steadier than she felt. The girl was a bit sweaty, and her clothes were scuffed, but she had a brilliant smile on her face as her swords floated behind her. She was using a cart like Jin did. It was loaded down with a big bundle, 5 saplings, and what looked like several large animal skulls. She heard someone mutter, "God damn it, another one?" under their breath. Sholan's eyes widened as she beheld Mei Ling fully.
"Sholan pays her respects to Senior Sister during this auspicious time," the girl said earnestly. "Please, allow this Sholan to accompany you." "Well, another guard wouldn't hurt."
Mei Ling inclined her head. The other woman marched to the guard position, seemingly without thinking, ousting Yao Che. The blacksmith frowned at the seizure of his position, especially having it taken by a woman.
"Now look here," he began, towering over the cultivator.
The swords floating behind Sholan multiplied from 2 to 16. Yao Che stared at the blades.
"Make sure you don't forget about your own cart. Here, let me take care of it for you."
The gong in the village sounded after they'd all finished assembling. And so the march began.